definitely.
With the Habitat program, we don't usually sell them like that. Like, we sell the individual units, so like, we have a three-unit development where like each one will.
We're on the record, everybody. All right, we're gonna call the meeting to order, guys. Calling to order the meeting to the Board of Housing Committee for Thursday, March.
Say April 28th, 2022. We'll do a roll call. Why don't we just start with Callie and go around the corner?
Callie Babbitt Spears, present.
Alicia Johnson.
Liz Karp.
Christian Blaney.
George Elwick.
And Brian Wagner for staff.
All right. First order of business is approval of the minutes from last week. Did everyone get a chance to take a look at them? Does anybody have any comments? No comments? Motion to approve the minutes.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Second. Minutes are approved from last week.
Well, we have a motion and a second. We need a
vote.
Call. Oh, a vote. I'm sorry. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Here we go.
All right. Two sets of meeting minutes here. Correspondence and public comments? I don't think we have any. We have no members of the public here.
We don't, no.
Any correspondence?
I was going to make an announcement, I guess, on behalf of South County Habitat.
Okay.
So, this is coming from our organization to the members of the South Kingstown Affordable Housing Collaborative and South Kingstown staff. South County Habitat for Humanity, a local nonprofit affordable housing developer, would like to express gratitude to the building and zoning officials who aided the nonprofit in facilitating the permitting process for our 58th home that will be built in South Kingstown. The construction of the single-family home will help increase the affordable housing stock in the town and will be sold and dedicated to a family who currently resides in Peacedale. And having the support of local town departments encourages South County Habitat to invest more in building within those communities, resulting in an increase of economic activity and affordable housing inventory. Sincerely, South County Habitat.
Excellent.
Nice.
Excellent. So we have a pretty thin agenda today, but I think it's because we're really trying to, we're going to walk out of here tonight with something with this education part, because we've been punching it around for a while now. Okay. We did on the meeting minutes from last week, last month, we had a couple of things. Alicia was going to do some outreach and I was going to do some outreach. I'll report on mine. I was gone for a week last week, so getting in touch with Annette Bourne of Housing Works was a little bit difficult to get her for a meeting. We do have a meeting set for May 5th. In our back and forth conversations, I was telling her what we were looking to do, and it was talking about education from the standpoint of, you know, educating the community about affordable housing and also educating the builders. As Joe said last week, I think he used the term, you know, how to make affordable housing, building affordable. She seemed pretty confident that they've probably got some things that they want to fold us right into, which would be great because they've already got these presentations set up, ready to go. They need extra speakers, they need people. So I think we're going to get some nice guidance from her. You and I sat in on that call. I think you were on it as well, Callie. I think, right, the Charlestown, the one with the Charlestown Affordable Housing. And I thought that was really well done, and that would be the sort of thing that they would do. And then we could figure out how to get it out to the general public here, to get people to tune in, and vice versa. So anyway, meeting with her on the 5th, and we'll report back to the group on that. So.
Yeah, so I reached out to Rhode Island Housing, and I got in touch. I talked to Carol Ventura, who is the executive director there, and she got me in touch with Amy Rinone? But she's the director of government relations and advocacy, and she said that that staff person would probably have the particular folks in Rhode Island Housing who could speak to the different strategies or like products that they offer for affordable housing development. And she said that she felt like they did an event like this before. It was like a roundtable discussion, but she couldn't recall if it was with South Kingstown or not, or maybe if it was just like a general kind of in partnership with Housing Works kind of discussion. Yeah. But I have her email either way, but she had said, you know, once we solidify kind of like concrete who we want to identify as our target audience, which I said it was pretty much any developer, whether that's for-profit or non-profit, and that we were thinking of having that separate community discussion as well. But to get that, and then what specific info we want to identify for them to share, and then it's just a matter of coordinating the rest of those logistics with day, time, how we want to host it, that stuff. But she seemed open to...
Because their big piece of it that we're really interested in is the larger funding for the larger projects, right? That was sort of what we were talking about last time. Refresh my memory if I'm wrong.
You're talking about multifamily?
In general, when we were sitting in on the Charlestown meeting, they were going through, you know, new project development, and they went a little bit into how they acquired the land, but the question was how do they fund it? You know, because they were funded privately, or they were funded with grants, or they were funded with. This is the part that we need to find out as much as we can about, right? Because we've talked about a number of different things. You know, just using an example, this is, you know, if we take a school building off of, because other towns have done this, take a school building offline from schooling, and with the thought of converting it into affordable housing condos, there was one that we circulated around that was in, I think it was in Seekonk. You know, how do you do that? You know, do you gift the land to the developers so they don't have the land costs, or does the town still own it and lease it back to them? You know, with an LLC, there's a number of different ways to do it. We're trying to figure out, you know, how do we get involved in that? How do we find out?
And there'll be a big thing, especially if you're, which most larger projects use low-income housing tax credits. They'll need to see that the land is available. I think we used to use, if it was quote-unquote leased land, you know, for $1 a year, for 100 years, that type of thing.
Sure.
And then sometimes it had a 100-year renewable. But that is one way of doing it, where the town retains some control to make sure it stays affordable.
And if you can take the cost of the land out of the equation for the developer, it makes it much less expensive for them to sell.
Yeah.
They're going to be more apt to build because they're more apt to make a profit on it. So
right.
But these are all the theory parts that we want to find out. People are doing it, so let's get the details.
Yeah, I would think somebody at... I know that somebody at the Rhode Island Housing, under their multifamily group, would be able to... Because they do that every day. They know what parts and pieces, as a matter of fact, they control a lot of them, so they can tell you how to put a project together.
Yeah, but I think the good part is I think we've determined the two fronts of education that we want to hit. It's community and it's developers.
Yeah, well, that's where I was thinking the developers would want to know that, because part of their, I read their QAP, they give a fair amount of points on a project where the developer has done it before, done a project. So you have to... A new person coming in may have to partner with another group to be able to score high enough to get the funding.
Sure.
Question, just because I haven't done this before. If we say that the town retains the ownership of the land, who is that? Who is the town? How does that... Who is the owner?
That's a good question. I mean, there's a number of ways that it can be done. In a couple of versions of it that I've seen recently, it's the town forms an LLC and has a management company that essentially runs it. So it's not like it's running through the town hall particularly. You know,
okay.
They've got like a board that essentially manages the property part of it, you know, the finances. And that part should be fairly minimal. It's almost like the town, it's almost like you're forming a homeowners association in a sense. But, you know,
it would be... quasi-governmental agency, like the Rhode Island Airport Corporation, is technically not part of the state government. It is a public-private sort of venture. So they are state, but they have freedom to do things that an ordinary government agency wouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
And then as far as the education for the developers and the community, what does the education for the community consist of? Like financial literacy or?
That's what we're going to talk about today.
There's so much to it.
And I think what we really want to do today is figure out, because one of the things that Annette wants to know when I meet with her is sort of what are our top five or seven things? Because it can be, I mean, financial literacy is part of it, but it can also be, so we can back it up and make it as simple as, do people even know we have an affordable housing committee, what we do, and that they can come to a meeting and they can chime in and they, you know, who is the Affordable Housing Collaborative Committee and what do they do? You know, that might be one of the releases.
Okay.
That might not be for a Zoom call with the community, but it might be part of the different, you know, a different outreach. We were talking about doing like a short Facebook outreach posts. You know, another might be what affordable housing projects do we have in town, you know, currently, and where do you find those? Because I believe we can access those on the town website. You can see the projects easily enough.
Actually, no, you can't access them on the town website at the moment. However, this is something I've been working on as a project of mine, simply because we did not have a very good database of how many affordable units we had. Let me see if I can get this up here.
Another one, really frankly, is what is affordable housing? When you say affordable housing, people automatically think government housing, Section 8. It's there's so much more to it than that. It's, you know, we call it the capital A, the small A affordable. It's the fact that, you know, housing prices have far exceeded, you know, most everyone's salaries in this town. You know, let's think about, you know, what is affordability and what does it mean? We're building an affordable housing complex. What does it exactly mean? It's really kind of basic education. You know.
Yeah. That letter about the bill, I thought was really good, the way that explained what affordable was and actually gave an example with numbers and what the median's, you know, range was. I thought that was really straightforward. And, yeah, I think most people don't know. The other thing, just to throw it out there, and it's on a different scale, and we've talked about it before, is the ADU. The accessory dwelling unit. I mentioned it to some friends of mine who've lived in the town for a long time. They never heard of it. Never knew what. They don't know what it was. They don't know what it means. And even though it may not be as significant as doing a multifamily development, it seems to me that if enough people in the town knew about it and could start to go that route, it could have an impact. Anything right now could have an impact.
It solves a few different angles. It solves having extra square footage to live in. It solves for people that maybe own their home outright, they're having a hard time paying their taxes.
Exactly.
You know, use that for extra income.
The other thing that was pointed out to me is the whole aging in place scenario. That was in the Projo article about it. They said with all the things that happened with COVID, when people went into assisted living, there is some benefit. I don't know if I totally agree with this, but there is some benefit for people to age in their own house, in their own home. And, oh, it was somebody from AARP said this. And if there is an ADU, it can be a caregiver's place or a child's place. So I don't think we need to plan for another pandemic, but it's sort of an interesting, take on it.
Of educating the public, you know, in the planning department, we deal a lot with state comprehensive permit things where developers will apply under comprehensive permits. It allows them to get more lots in a subdivision in return for making some of them deed restricted affordable. Now that's on the big development sorts of things. But a critical thing on an individual level is that exercising the comprehensive permit process allows you to avoid most of the local zoning restrictions. So if the zoning restrictions would not allow you to have two independent dwelling units on a piece of property, if you make it a comprehensive permit project, you can avoid that restriction and put two independent dwelling units on a piece of property. One of them will have to be deed restricted affordable. But if you're talking about aging in place, the flip side of that is young people who can't afford to move into the area, you build an ADU or a second dwelling unit for the two people who are no longer needing the big house anymore. They can move into that, and then the house becomes available for another family. Mm-hmm. The seniors qualify for affordable housing in many circumstances, so they have no problem living in an affordable unit. They can rent the house out front for market rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like that the ADU example would be good for that community conversation, because that's like something that you could do as a homeowner or an individual, where like the state comprehensive permit tool might be more interest of the developer because they're building more units.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the benefit towards the community of doing things on that small scale on existing lots is when somebody comes in and does a subdivision with a whole bunch of new houses, you're only getting a very small number of affordable units in compared to the number of market rate units that they're making. Mm-hmm. If you do this on a single lot, you're not creating any new market rate units. You're only creating a new affordable unit.
I have a question, though, about the regulations on that. How do you regulate the ADU so it doesn't become student housing? Because you're really defeating the whole purpose of it if it's just opened up again for URI students.
Well,
or a summer rental. I mean,
if somebody just creates an ADU.
Yep.
I have a garage, I put an apartment over the top of it, I make an ADU. There's nothing that's going to prevent me from renting that to students or doing the academic seasonal rotation that a lot of the rentals do around here. However, if it is a deed-restricted affordable unit, it must go to somebody who qualifies to be in that unit. And in most instances, it has to be rented on a yearly basis.
Okay, that's good to know.
To get the tax break.
To get the tax break, sure. Right.
But keeping in mind, too, what we're talking about are very small units.
Right.
A college rental might be one graduate student. It might be a one bedroom. I mean, these are miniature.
Right,
there's not something you can call three kids in. That sort of thing. That's part of it.
Right.
But for example, there's a house that we've been dealing with right down on at the corner of High and Oak Dell, where they had a single house with two units in it and a detached garage out back. They demoed the detached garage and put a living unit in there. So three dwelling units on one piece of property, and they got away with that by using the comp permit process. Mm-hmm. We didn't create any more market rate units. We got an affordable unit by letting them do that. And it's small. It's like a cottage. It's only like 500 or 600 square feet.
Right. But still, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the comp permit, that's the, you said it's the state comp permit?
Comprehensive permit.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I definitely think that's one thing that they could, at the state level, like speak to, right? Like Rhode Island Housing would be able to speak to that. I don't know. Like, is it commonly known among regular developers that permit exists?
I think it is commonly known again amongst developers, people who are in the development business. I don't think it's commonly known amongst individual property owners. That's my point.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that if you can get infill with people interested in putting an additional unit on properties that already exist, it can actually be a bigger help to our housing situation than doing these giant...
Yeah, that's a gold star then for an education program.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Totally.
Makes sense.
All right, let's start listing these out because we've already got some good ones here. Yeah. We're going to walk out of here with 5 or 7.
Okay.
That's the goal anyway. So, I mean, how basic do you want to get? I mean, we really...
I think basic. I think we need to start with, pretty basic.
You know, what is affordable housing? I mean, that's really probably step one, right?
Yep.
Now, let me ask the group this. We had talked about twofold. We're talking about doing Zoom calls as well. We also talked about putting together some small bits that we can put out on the town website. Are we still interested in doing that? So we've got something that can float out there, and I'm sorry, on the town Facebook page. So you've got something that can kind of live and breathe, that someone can see and can be passed around, and has some staying power to it, or are we not doing that, and we're just focusing on doing a couple of...
I'd say hit it from every point we can hit it. Okay. I mean, people like social media. People use social media. And in a lot of cases, more than they'll come to a meeting and more than Zoom, because they can do it when they're having their cup of coffee in the morning. Hit it. Yeah, I'd say yes, absolutely, Facebook.
And if we put together five of these, do we feel comfortable with each of us taking one and taking a stab at writing some stuff so that we can... hash through it, we can write it, submit it to Brian, you can send it to everybody before the next meeting, we can read through it, and then we can knock it around a little bit?
Sure.
Does that sound reasonable?
Actually, for reasons I will explain at the staff report, you'll have two meetings to do that.
Oh, okay.
Because next meeting you will have a different angle.
So gotcha.
Right. I'll explain that when we get to that.
Got it. Okay. All right. So number one is, you know, really, what is affordable housing, right?
And you know, I would add to that too is, why is that a critical issue right now? You know, and go into this, the whole thing about how there's not much housing stock, and with the URI students, why is it an issue?
And also too, not just affordable but safe. I mean, we can't leave out the people, even though, you know, there's a family, for example, and I've always brought this up, there's a family that's experiencing abuse in the home. You're not homeless, but you're also not safe in your home. So what are the other options to make sure that if an individual, especially, you know, whether they have kids or not, they want to leave that situation, what are their chances of going into housing that is affordable for them and their circumstances, and also maintain the safety and make sure that, you know, just...
Yeah, it's a big question, and the trick is going to be getting it down to something that is kind of, you know, simplifying it as baseline as we can to at least get the conversation started. Mm-hmm. Because again, I think that the overall, you know, we talked a little bit about, some people think, well, that means overbuilding. Oh, we're going to build a bunch of stuff now. We're going to turn, you know, South Kingstown into whatever, we're talking. You know, some people think it's, you know, we're going to start building apartment complexes, you know, that aren't going to look good in town. Really, it's really neither of those things. It has more to do with, you know, the population shift, the demographics, where we live in relation to the ocean, where we live in relation to the college, you know, and what's happened with people coming in and buying properties and that sort of thing. So,
and also, too, it's not just, you know, having one particular community, like an isolated little apartment complex. Yeah, it's affordable, but it's also not going to be a huge white flag saying, yeah, I'm here because it's affordable for me. I mean, more so for the safety of people kind of just dispersed out into, you know, so it's not just a single... Well, I know you're there because that's what you can afford. It's more dispersed. I don't know.
But I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but part of the really essential characteristic of affordable housing, besides the fact that it's affordable, is that it is near transportation.
And that too.
And it is near potential employment. And it is near services. So it's more than just... the housing, it's all these other components as well.
There's a ton of information in this, you know, and you had sent these links out, Brian. I can't remember where they were. Maybe were they bounced off of one of the agendas?
Yes, it was on the March.
It was in the March?
It was on, yeah, because I saved that email because it's all off of that.
Maybe I'll re-forward the March agenda if I still have it.
Okay.
Because the comprehensive plan talks all about that. It talks about safety, it talks about the walkability, it talks about the fact that the houses have to look like the community.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you said, we're not
like a big
cornering it.
Yeah, here it is, if you want to see it. It's just full of links. So it's
Brian will email it out.
Yeah, it's great. Okay.
So that's really the basic of what is affordable housing. We can kind of have someone take a stab at it and knock it around in 2 weeks. I think the other important one is what is the town doing about affordable housing? And I say that because amongst my profession, when I talk to people, there is they don't do anything about it. And I'm like, it's not true. We've got Habitat, we've got...
People just don't know. They just don't know.
They just don't know. As far as, so when new developments come, there's a requirement for affordable units. And then, here's the projects that we have coming on the pike right now. At one point, you had given us like a unit count, one of the meetings a few weeks ago. He said, maybe it was Joe. We've got 30-something units that are coming in these three developments, yep. Something like that. I think that stuff is interesting for people to know that there are things going on. And also the fact that we do have a pretty robust new comprehensive plan that is really fairly brand new. I don't know how many community members have seen it or even know that it exists, but referencing it is probably pretty helpful.
So I think questions that we could address in a community forum is, what is affordable housing? What can it look like? But not necessarily the aesthetic of it, but like it could be like mixed income communities, like we were saying, like where there's market rate and affordables in one area. It can look like ADUs, it can look like the cottage ordinance, and using those examples that we've created in a town to say this is what we mean when we say affordable, this is what affordable housing could look like, and having that conversation of it has to check off the boxes that it's safe, that it's looks decent and is going with kind of what we have in the comprehensive plan of the town aesthetic or the community, that whether it's a village versus other areas, and that it's affordable by definition, and what that means when we say affordable. Because a lot of people do wonder what is affordable, and it can be, from the technical term, it can be anywhere from 40 to 120% AMI. And what does that mean to the average human? They're not sure. So a lot of folks who may qualify for affordable housing don't know it, because when they hear affordable housing, they assume that there's a lower, it only follows like a certain income range. So I think we could talk about those and what already exists in the town as a way of promoting those things. Because like you said, not a lot of folks know about the ADU thing and how very new it is. And the cottage ordinance is another thing that could be a great tool for developers to use to address creating and housing stock and more of it in a smaller scale to address some of the needs. Not all of them, but some of them.
I have a question. First of all, where can I get more information about the cottage ordinance? I don't know that much about it.
What do you want? I can easily send you the ordinance.
Yeah, why don't you do that? Okay. Just as a starting point. The question I have about affordable is, how does senior housing fit into that? Is it a subset? Is it the same thing? Is it like...
It's treated by the state as a subset.
Okay, so there's affordable housing and then there's senior affordable housing. Is that right?
Affordable housing, elderly housing, family housing, supportive housing.
Okay.
So it's one of the components.
And I think when it comes to the 10% rule, any of those subsets...
Correct.
Can fulfill that. So a town could say, okay,
I'm only doing elderly housing.
Right, which is a conversation that happens at a lot of different levels of, yes, that's addressing a need, but looking at the needs of the community, is that addressing all of the population that's in need of it?
Yeah. Right, so a lot of towns have gone all in on the elderly housing thing because it checks the box for their 10% and doesn't generate costs in terms of school.
Oh, right.
It sort of becomes an attractive way to solve the problem. Unfortunately, the affordable housing needs are much greater than just elderly.
In New Hampshire, we found that many communities did that and found out that it was actually worse for their community than building family housing, because businesses can't make as much money. You have higher costs.
Unanticipated consequences.
Exactly. Yeah, emergency services. Mm-hmm. Ambulances out all the time. all these things that people don't think about.
And eventually it gets to a point where it actually has a negative impact on the school system.
Absolutely.
Because you have a wealthy, well-educated community like South Kingstown whose parents expect a certain level of education out of their schools. But as your school population drops,
you can't,
the school can no longer offer
right.
the kinds of programs for right. the depth and breadth
it is.
Of programs
it's,
that parents expect in terms of multiple languages, advanced placement.
You don't have
placement.
The per capita. You just don't have the mat, the critical no. mass
and,
of
you
students.
Know, you have it, the per student cost goes way up.
Could we,
because you can only have a certain, you know, you can't
control
one
interest,
teacher.
You don't have the interest, you don't have the same energy.
Exactly.
Of that.
Could we, like, market our education event as sort of, like, demystifying affordable housing? Because I think in that conversation, too,
yeah.
a lot of folks may look at the other end of, like, well, you know, if we increase the number of families in a community, then that may increase the amount of taxes that go towards the schools because there's more kids. So I think that opens up that conversation of, you know, it's not like we need to have, it's not just one, it's a variety of different, what's the word I'm thinking of? Just a variety of different approaches to addressing the issue of like, you do need to have housing for seniors and you do need to have housing for family and you do have to have housing for supportive service. Like you can have all. And still meet your 10% goal. So I don't know if that's an approach we want to take is, because I'm thinking of like, we have these conversations oftentimes with folks in at the table or in the room who are typically in favor of creating solutions to affordable housing. And I think a little bit of that conversation we want to have with folks who may be hesitant to have affordable housing or they're welcoming of it, but not near them. And so, you know, I'm trying to think, how do we engage the audience that doesn't want to, that they're going to hear an affordable housing education event, and they're going to be like, I'm going to be as far away from that as possible.
Exactly.
We engage the people who organized to vote the bond from the school down. Because, in my opinion, that was the first brick laid in a really bad road that we're heading down. Because it told the rest of the state that we are not interested in making the school system better. Your high school is your crown jewel of your town. And people aren't not moving here because of the property taxes. They're not moving here because there's no houses to buy. And people that can afford houses, they can still actually afford houses here, are going to other towns because they're looking at South Kingstown, like, what's going on with the school system?
Right.
The high school currently is a dump. I have a daughter that's graduated from there, and it's worse now than it was when she entered in ninth grade. My second daughter is going to be in ninth grade this year.
Yep. But that is, if you move into a town, if you have the financial resources, the first thing you look at is the schools.
Correct.
Absolutely.
I noticed a huge shift this past year, and it has been the worst experience for my kids. They're like, can we just go to another? They want to go to another. They don't, they're like, and it's sad because I hear that it's such a trend because I speak to other families and they are saying the same thing. Like, and it's really kind of sad.
My daughter's got excellent education.
Yeah.
You know, she's going to college next year and she was honors and loved it. The school, the teachers, it's like, but the facilities are a lot of what people look at. And 75% of the town voted the bond down. They did a really good job with marketing that, you know, it was going to raise the taxes and it was going to do certain things. But I think getting this information out to say, what that does is, if we continue to cater to a shrinking enrollment rather than trying to affect it, which I think affordable housing is a huge piece of it, we're going down that road where are the workers going to come from that are going to wash dishes at the restaurants? The restaurants will be closing, you know, businesses that are doing things down the line. And then that vote will continue to happen. Eventually, there won't be kids here. Eventually, you know, in high school, when I broke my ankle skateboarding, when I went to the hospital, it was like my aunt worked there. The lady who was the x-ray tech was like my mom's friend. Like, it was like, that's how it was. That's the small town feel that everybody loves, that they're all trying to hang on to, is going to be gone because people can't afford to live there. The teachers will all be living elsewhere.
Yeah.
And that's just what is going to happen.
Right.
I think that vote, honestly, was the biggest block and the starting point for that.
So. Yeah, and the other is, how far do you want to go to visit your grandchildren? Because they can't afford to live here.
Your
children can't live in this town.
At this point, we started out talking about affordability. affordable housing program for developers, but I'm hearing a lot more about educating the public about why it is that affordable housing is something that they should be concerned about. And I don't think you can tackle both of those things at the level you would like to in the same program. Maybe you should think about two different programs.
Yeah.
There may be some overlap between them, but I don't think you are going to be able to do everything that you're talking about in one night without losing your audience.
I was already assuming we were talking about
I
was thinking it was two separate Zoom calls, basically, to start with.
Yeah, it seemed like we were spending a lot of time talking about topics that would come up in like a community-based conversation.
Yes.
So let's talk about community for a minute. Who's our target audience? Whether it's a Zoom call or a roundtable discussion or whatever it is, who's our target?
Everybody that lives in town in South Kingston.
So are we thinking of doing like a Zoom call and doing the invite on like the town of South Kingstown? I think there's two pages, we have to be clear. I think there's like two pages now, our town of South Kingstown and then the town of South Kingstown. Are we asking folks on both of those platforms to join one platform, like on a some kind of Zoom to have that public conversation and then branch off from there?
Once we get the Zoom, the Zoom call figured out, right, whether it's to start, whether it's something that we help with, Housing Works helps us with, or, you know, we get it set up, we've got our topics, we've got our speakers, we'll certainly go to them for the invites to spread the word, because then it's about marketing the fact that it's happening, you know, so we can make sure we get enough people to go on to it. But yeah, and the Our Town site is run by, that's not related
there's
to the
Our
town,
and then there's the town of South Kingstown.
Yeah, the Our Town isn't related but to the town.
No, it's just a group. It's just a Facebook group.
Yeah. There's two different.
Yeah.
But it's the same. It's the same town people.
Yeah. But that would get the word out fastest for you know, for the invites anyway. But we've got to get a meeting together first.
The planning department has a Zoom account, so we would just set it up and then push the link out through whatever resources you have, whether it's town website or, you know, alternative websites, Facebook.
We can
Are we able to record on the planning department Zoom, like if we recorded that call? I think Zoom would be the best to start with, because then we don't have to worry about coordinating the logistics of like an in-person event, but also people might be more likely, or it's more accessible for people to log into that, or if there's a recording of it, to watch the recording later. And it seemed like the Zoom call that the other group did had a pretty good turnout or so. So I think even, you know, I don't know what our goal is for how many people outside of our circle.
30,000.
I don't know. What's the population of the town?
Is it really?
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it sounds like we're all agreeing on like a Zoom type of platform to do the presentation on, both different presentations, just as far as getting as many people aware and on as possible.
Yeah.
I don't know if the developer one would be more of a public conversation, because like maybe that would be more of like a you've been invited, like we invite. I just don't know how to recruit developers for that conversation unless
that
we did like
a question for Joe tonight was if we did one for developers,
like
how
a
we,
personal invite from the committee to join us for
that.
That.
I mean, there are ways to do that. I mean, we have a couple of members of our planning board. Joe is one. Peter DiStefano, who's DiStefano Builders, down here at the corner. You know, they can certainly reach out to people that they know or put us in contact with. People who can push the word out.
Chamber of Commerce.
Sure, we could use the Chamber of Commerce. We could probably use the Rhode Island Builders Association.
Johnny Cake Center, too.
Habitat.
Habitat would be there.
Stuff.
Yeah, I could definitely. I think that event would be more like we would do those direct reach out. Because, like, I'm thinking just off the top of my head, there's a National Association of Women in Construction, like Rhode Island chapter, that we could notify about the event. And like you said, those other entities that are connected to contractors. Because I feel like that would make more, or at least have a more direct outreach plan, and then maybe it's a virtual conversation. But I feel like for that, if we're the conversation tailored to developers, we may want to have more of a intentional reaching out plan versus like a community one blasted to the masses, send it to all the, you know, folks who are in that space to spread the word. That might, if the idea of that is to get as many people in the listening to the conversation as possible, where this one sounds like it's more like, here's tools, tips, and tricks for you as a developer, if you didn't know they existed or didn't know how they worked, to learn more about those things.
And really, it could go down as low as even a regular contractor. Like, for example, if I was a small contractor and I had knowledge about the ADU system, right, the ADUs, and also that, you know, the person doing ADU could possibly get a grant to help towards some of the costs for it, I might go out and market that. You know, I might be knocking on neighbor's doors and saying, hey, you can build an ADU, and here's how you can do it. If you have some knowledge in that, that might be a business a one-man show might want to take up, you know? So, I mean, it doesn't have to be, like, the big developers either. It can be anybody. But that's certainly the way to get the word out. I was forgetting about the chamber. We can probably get from the chamber a list of every builder and contractor, you know, within minutes, and get a spreadsheet and send it out to them. So,
yeah, definitely.
That's how we do it. All right, this is good. So we're definitely talking about two. We know that for sure. And it would be, you know, the what is affordable housing and how does it affect our community? You know, that's a big topic, as we're seeing, right? Even as we're actually.
Yeah, it is. So. Yeah.
And also, again, so that we're not totally. My guess is when I meet with Annette, she's going to tell me that she's done this presentation 18 times over already and has all kinds of ideas and, you know, it has subject matter and it's probably pretty similar from town to town. So, I'm interested to see what comes of that.
Yeah, I'd asked, Amy said that she had, when she did an event similar to that, there might be info that, like, those attendees that were part of that discussion could share. So I told her to share that with me if there were, like, points that they didn't get to that were really important or things that they wish to discuss that they didn't have the chance to. So if she does provide those to me, I'll share among the group too. So.
I think the ADU part of this goes probably on both the community and the developers. We were just saying, so I think for the community one, it's really, you know, did you know, that our, comprehensive plan allows you to, in certain areas, because it's not everywhere that in the town that they can automatically build. It's got to be on town sewer, correct?
No, it does not necessarily have to be on town sewer. That's certainly the locations where we are pushing them, but so long as you can get DEM certification that your system can handle the additional flow, you can build them elsewhere as well.
Could you put a system in if you wanted to?
Yeah. Again, it depends. Yeah. Do you have the space to be able to do it?
Yep.
So it sounds like a lot of what we're presenting to the community is, did you know that?
Yeah.
You know, do you know what affordable housing is? Do you know what an ADU is?
Yeah.
Do you know how to go about the process and what the restrictions are?
Yeah, and do you know why it's important to the community?
Right.
Yeah, and with the ADU one, it's not just, you know, do you know what it is that you can buy one, you know, that you are allowed to attempt to build one, you know, permitted and all that, that you may be able to get some cost relief if you apply for the Affordable Housing Fund, but also, what would be the, you know, here's some reasons why you might want one.
Right.
You know, right, here's some uses for it, because some people may not really understand what it's for. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think a she shed or man cave, they don't realize it might be a spot that somebody could actually live in. Yeah.
She shed.
I'm giggling because that's actually something I want.
That sounds good.
Looking forward to it.
My daughters have been bugging me about our shed in the backyard for a long time.
I said that.
It's full of mice, though.
Good question. I know that there's a tax benefit to developing affordable housing. Is there a tax benefit, or does this type of thing exist in this community or other communities where if I'm a homeowner or I'm a landlord and I'm doing the right thing, right? Like, I'm renting my market rate unit affordably. Like, is there any benefit that they get to that, or like that you've ever heard of that exists? Like, any type of tax benefit?
What, that the landlord gets? That the
yeah, like, say the landlord rented their unit. They could rent it for $2,000 a month, but they decided that they're going to
do the right thing,
quote unquote, and rent it for half of that.
Yeah, under market rent.
Right. Like, would there is
there any incentive?
Is there any incentive to do that other than like if
it
was?
I don't believe there is. So, the ability of local towns to do tax exemptions is regulated by state statute. Towns just can't go off and start giving away tax exemptions. Otherwise, every connected person in town would be getting one.
That's an interesting question.
Well, because I know like there's like homestead, so that's obviously like at the state level, there's guidance on homestead exemptions that towns can adopt.
One of the things that is allowed is if you have a deed-restricted low-mod housing, the town can exempt you from local taxes for that.
But that there has to be that restriction.
It has to be formal. It has to have that formal deed.
Whereas just choosing to rent under market value is not.
Just makes you
there's nothing holding them accountable to that.
And think about it, because there's nothing that binds the landlord to do that. You could go under market rate because you like this person, but when they leave, maybe you don't like the next person, and
or you need the money more, so you go back up again. Right.
You want a new car, so
and then it opens the can of worms of like the land homeowners versus the town telling. Yeah, like there's no way the town's going to go in and say, "Hey, you have to rent your house."
And
for
you
this
could
much.
Have somebody that is renting a slum. Because it goes to somebody cheap, then they don't have to pay taxes on the slum.
Right.
Don't do any improvements. And so you'd have to regulate it
where
somehow.
Where deed restriction would have maybe those regulations in
place.
Yeah. Wasn't sure. But good to know.
All right. So far for the four sort of general topics that I've got, you know, what is affordable housing? I know that's a big one, but we'll take a stab at it. What is the town doing about affordable housing? Why is affordable housing important to our community? Because I think that's a separate topic from the what is, as we sort of blended those two.
Mm-hmm.
And then number four is a little more detailed, but that's the, you know, ADUs. You know, what is an ADU? Did you know you have the ability to build it? And what might be the, you know, good strategies and why you're trying to build it?
I think you can broaden that topic a little bit into what can you do? As an individual homeowner, what is it that you can do on your property? Because ADUs is one thing. Small comprehensive unit projects is something else.
Okay, yeah.
If you have a big enough lot, you know, maybe you have one house on a half acre lot or an acre lot, you may be able to keep your house and add a cottage development to it. So there's lots of different things that an individual property owner might be able to think about.
Right. So that's a good sort of header.
Yeah.
What can you do about affordable housing?
Right.
Do we want to be specific when we say affordable housing and kind of touch on like Section 8 landlords that are renting to Section 8 ultra holder?
I think.
Do we want to be specific, or do we not want to?
I guess it's how we decide to define it. Because I think it's like there's the, like, from my perspective, the textbook definition is there's an income. Affordable housing is that cost of housing does not exceed 30% of that person's income, which I believe Section 8 is designed so that the portion that the tenant pays is 30%. So I think that would...
Right. I'm thinking more broadly than that. And we've talked about previously, and it might be before you guys were here, about, you know, we're talking capital A and lowercase a affordable housing. You know, capital A is the true definition of it. Section 8 is part of it, income-restricted stuff. We're talking about the fact that the housing has outpaced salaries at the University of Rhode Island right now. Like, incoming professors can't afford to buy a house here. You know, it's not just, at this point, it's a much larger umbrella. It's really about sort of the what are the demographics of the town going to be going forward when people can't move here with family. Mm-hmm. You know, it, so it's really a bigger.
It's more of a cultural
so
kind of thing.
So I think renting, I think those who have who are landlords who are maybe concerned about this issue, I think one of the things we could bring up as part of our, like, tools in our affordable housing toolkit would be renting to voucher holders, because that would, their unit would technically, would that, I guess that's the question we're asking, would that increase the supply of affordable housing?
I don't know that it increases the supply, but it increases the number of people who might be able to occupy it if they qualify for the vouchers. Mm-hmm. I think a component of this might be demystifying Section 8 vouchers and what they are. It's really just a payment process.
But I asked that because, so there's a reason I asked that question. I know that families are, obviously some, a lot of them are turned down because they have the voucher, but when you do have the voucher, the first year, usually, you're in a lease. The second year, you don't have a lease, it's more like a month to month. And with the, in, it's not really an issue because the families, obviously, they don't pay more than 30% of their income, but the concern is now, say, for example, you're renting a unit that's two bedrooms and you're paying $1,640. But with your voucher holder, you're paying 30% of your income. So, okay, fine. The second year, now it's month to month, second, third, fourth, however many years. The landlord can decide to increase the rent. It's not going to really so much affect the family, because the family and, you know, whoever's paying the, you know, head of household, 30%. Now it becomes, I don't know if it's more of a burden on the Section 8 housing authority or wherever it's coming from. Now the family's paying 30%, but the Section 8 voucher is paying now, instead of $1,640, like $2,000.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's more of a burden on the program.
I think there is some restriction on how much the rent can go up at any one time. It has to stay within the area market market rents.
Yeah.
So HUD, your Section 8 vouchers all come from HUD, whether they're portable or project-based. But they have to put up with an inspection from time to time. They have to prove that their tenant is of the income level they say they are, and that type of thing. So there's a lot of stuff that goes into it.
Yeah.
But I don't believe they can just increase the rent for what they want.
It's happening. I'm just that, and that's why.
Well, it may be because rents are going up so high.
Yeah.
That's probably where they're getting away with it, because right now you have market rent has gone up.
Yeah.
You know, how many percent? 50, 100?
Yeah.
So I think that's where it's happening. They're able to get that.
Yeah. Anyway, I just,
but it will limit them, because the, you know, obviously the federal government's not going to allow anymore.
I mean, that's not anything we can control, obviously.
No, it's not.
How are you seeing that fit into educating the community about it, in the sense that, I guess, would this fall under the what can you do for affordable housing?
I'm not sure it goes into that.
No, okay.
I don't think, because it's a federal program and.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, not everybody can get into it.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd bring that up.
It's a good idea. But it's,
or educating landlords for the program so that they can, you know, so that we're welcoming more families in instead of pushing them out. Because, again, that tax thing in the schools and
That might be on the developer side, because, and the the state's QIP, they give points for project-based.
Right. Well, I mean, here's the thing, and if we do this right, we're just starting, you know, I mean, we're literally just starting from square one, right? And we're starting pretty basic. If we do this right, and it turns into something that we're doing regularly, which we're supposed to be doing, let's plan here, it's probably going to get granular. We're, you know, there's probably an idea for an entirely separate landlord class, right? How to be a better landlord. And Section 8 is probably part of that, you know. There's probably a number of things that goes into that. So I can see a lot's going to come out of this stuff, I think, right now.
Yeah, when we did the organizations I worked with in New Hampshire, we did landlord classes for people buying homes, because if you can buy a home with an apartment and stuff, but a lot of people don't. They're either afraid to become a landlord or don't have any clue as to how to become a landlord. So that type of community education is something that you'd want to see.
Rhode Island Housing actually does those like on a monthly basis for free, because if you're doing the Rhode Island Housing first-time home buyer
loan,
you have to take a landlord class.
Right.
Although they do them online now too, which I think they're a little less effective.
Yeah, I think so too.
People can click.
Yep.
But they've already got that stuff all queued up.
But how many people know about it? Yeah, except,
But anyway, trying to keep it, I think we're just trying to keep it as top line as possible, at least for this first stab at it. All right, so what else as far as, I mean, I think I've got four here, but they're four pretty big topics.
So we said, can you repeat them again, please?
So I've got, what is affordable housing?
Yep.
Couldn't be any larger than that, right? What is the town doing about affordable housing? Why is affordable housing important to our community? And what can you do as a resident homeowner to help affordable housing?
Could we do, what does affordable housing look like in our community? And then use examples from, like, the properties that we know exist on that list? Like, we could pull a couple?
I think that's part of the what is the town doing about affordable
housing. Oh, okay.
I think each one of those topics is so big and could run for such a long... I mean, those could be half an hour, 45 minutes, each one of them. I guess the question is, do we want to put subcategories under them, or do we want to just take a stab at writing up something about each one of those four categories?
Yep, so that's what I was suggesting, that we break this up and we write about them. I don't know that all of these are going to fit into the first community presentation, for sure.
They're huge. You
know, this is essentially what I'm going to go to Annette Bourne from HousingWorks and say, here's really what we're knocking around. You know, what are you guys doing? What do you suggest? She's already done a ton of these. Let's, again, remake the wheel here.
Right.
You know, the what is and why is it important might be one. That might be the one presentation to start with,
right.
And you know, with guest speakers and that sort of thing, that probably takes up an hour and a half to 2 hours. But yeah, I'd like to break this up amongst us, you know, to write up some, to take a stab at writing some things up that we can then use for publishing, and those would be the one little bits, as you know, keeping them as little bit as we possibly can, and we might find that we break into a few different ones as well. So, do I have any takers for any of these products? I would like to do the what can you do for affordable housing, which has the information about the ADUs, the small comprehensive projects. That's something I worked on, so I think.
Yeah, I'd like to take a stab at the first one.
Okay.
What is affordable? Isn't that what, tell me exactly what it is? What is affordable?
What is affordable housing?
I better start tonight, huh? What is?
So we've got, what is the town doing about affordable housing, and why is affordable housing important to our community?
We can do the why.
You want to do the why?
I can do why. Write that down.
Are you guys teaming up on that one? George, that leaves you with.
Unfortunately, I'm not very. No, I understand.
I think probably connecting with Brian just on that spreadsheet, you know. And you probably, ironically, you probably have more experience with this anyway, based on your background, which is, you know, the inclusionary zoning and the, you know, all that sort of stuff. So. That part.
Do you have an overview?
Think of it like this: you just moved here, and you want to know, what's happening. You know, what projects does the town have going on now, and what are they doing about it? Well, when there's new developments, this percentage of it, 20% of it, has to be deemed affordable, and here's projects that are already in the queue, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I can direct you to the.
Yeah, that would be great.
I can.
All right, so everyone has homework.
And we did it, right?
Two meetings from now. We got plenty
two
of time.
Meetings.
Yeah.
Mm.
But Megan got out lucky today, didn't she?
Actually, I think after your talk, then you may know more.
Yep.
About what is already out there.
Yep.
Where we can plug some of this stuff in.
What I'll do is after I meet with Annette, I'll send information out to Brian to distribute.
That'd be great.
So that we're not supposed to email each other. So.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So,
what is the reason for that? You told us once.
It's public meeting.
It's considered a public meeting.
Yeah, that's
so
universal.
You're not allowed to meet, whether it's in person or electronically, in an amount that creates a quorum. So
three or more.
We currently have
and discuss this
six members. So communication amongst four of you, whether it's all at the same time or in sequence, is a meeting, which is illegal. So we try to be very conservative in how we deal with it, because you meet once a month. There really isn't anything in most cases that's such an emergency that you have to deal with it in between meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always free to contact me. And I am always free to distribute information to the board as a group.
So in other words, we did this one time, we had an issue where we sent out some information and people started commenting on it. Brian was like, nobody comment.
Yeah, right.
So now, wisely, if you ever want to distribute something to the group, just send it to Brian and he'll distribute it out.
Great.
Right?
So
that's, yeah. Okay.
Okay. So one more thought. Do we care at all what other states are doing on any of this? Is that relevant or is that too picky, too detailed?
I mean,
in the case of ADUs,
I'm a big Google
if you.
Researcher.
What did you say?
I'm a big Google researcher. So
no, sure. I was going to say, if you put ADU into Google, you can find out what they're doing in California. And it's kind of interesting whether it's relevant or not, is another question. It's interesting.
I think it's also a question of, what are other towns doing? I know that in South County, there are towns that are trying to develop similar affordable housing collaborative committees. I think Charlestown, Richmond, Narragansett, off the top of my head, have them. But I don't know what other towns outside of this county are doing, but I think they're all, might be looking at this.
I think it's always an interesting exercise to look at what other people are doing. I was just reading, I forget whether it was Portland or Seattle, but it was Pacific Northwest, along the ADU idea, where they've made it easier to do ADUs and they've put a maximum floor space restriction on new house construction. So you are not allowed to build a new house with more than 2,500 square feet. But it's way easier to now build the extra ADU living space.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to...
Is there a difference between the definition of a tiny home and an ADU? I know in Rhode Island they don't have anything I think at the state level that defines those. So they just, it's hard because insurance companies don't even know how to insure them because there's no criteria for them. But is technically an ADU a tiny house?
Because
to your point, I've seen other states do that, do tiny home communities as a way to address
and
the
well,
houses.
It depends on what the transportation
they have
issue
granny pots
is
too.
Because you have RVs,
which
are
they're mobile,
permanently on wheels.
Right.
You have mobile homes, which can be removed from their chassis. I think there's park homes are also considered something different. And ADUs, which are permanently affixed on a foundation. So
and isn't there
different
also
towns may
yeah.
treat them different ways.
Yeah. Isn't there also a characteristic of an ADU that you take the utilities from the existing home? Rather,
no. Not in South Kingstown.
Oh, okay, because I did read that somewhere, and I don't know if I don't remember where the location was. Okay. Interesting.
Go to maximal.com. Write that one down. So we did extensive EDU stuff.
What is it? Maximal?
Maximal. Is it Maximal or Maximal Space? It's like the biggest California like EDU developer. They're like a... They're not a nonprofit. They're a business, but they help people do projects, find builders, plan specs. They've got videos and all sorts of stuff.
M-A-X-I-M-A-L?
Yeah. Maximal. Yeah. M-A-X-A-B-L-E.
Oh,
Maximal.
B-L-E.
Maximal. It's either Maximal or Maximal Space.
Okay.
But yeah, we were researching the EDU stuff. We did, you know, tons of sort of looking to see, you know, what other towns are doing. And California was by far the biggest. They have a huge push for it. They've got some tax incentives. But to build an EDU out there was like, it was outrageous. I mean, the building costs.
Yeah. Well, they're also trying to get rid of these homeless, these tent cities that they have too. And they kind of feel that if they could get... I'm not sure that equates, but...
The other thing that communities have been playing around with ADUs is having pre-approved off-the-shelf designs.
Right.
So they'll have...
Prefabs, little prefabs.
A bunch of architects come in and submit things, and then they'll license the designs. And if you want to come in, you pick it off the shelf. There's no planning process. You go pull your building permit and build it. Mm-hmm.
Is there any regulation about being detached or attached to the... do you have to be detached?
No, you don't.
To be an ADU?
The distinction between an ADU and an in-law apartment is that an in-law apartment must have an internal ingress and egress between the units.
Mm-hmm.
And the permit for an in-law apartment does not transfer with the property. So if you sell your house, the person who buys it does not have a right to have an in-law apartment. They would have to come back to the zoning board and get their own individual approval.
Interesting. So you could sell your house and the person living in the in-law apartment could just stay there?
No. Well, I guess you've got a buyer who's willing to let them stay there.
Yeah.
If they're paying rent, why not?
Is that because if they decided they want to live in the unit or the in-law apartment and rent the house, they would need to, like, have that?
No, because in the in-law apartment is designed really only for family members.
Right, okay.
And the idea is that the house can easily or relatively easily be put back to a single residential unit.
I'm going to announce that we've moved into the reoccurring agenda item stage, which is open discussion. But I do encourage all of you guys to do Google search stuff. Like, you know, I'm up late a lot, and even typing in something as simple as, you know, case studies for affordable housing, trying to find out what other states are doing and if they're doing it well. And it feels like the majority of the country is really at the beginning of this. There isn't a lot of, like, I just want to find that one that says, here's what we're doing it great. It's so different everywhere.
Right.
You know,
if you Google something like reuse of school buildings to affordable housing, I mean, there's a ton of stuff that comes up, but whether it's, you know, all around the country, it comes up.
Well, we were financing units in our bank for one, and I sent it to Brian. Brian was aware of it. It was like a three-story old school building that they turned into little condos, and they were gorgeous. And they were like $190 a piece, and they had like a very low HOA fee. And the reason was because this was the version where the town leased it, right? The town formed the LLC, turned it into a condo complex. Builder, all they had to do was renovate the building. They basically gave the building to the builder.
Wow.
Land is leased. You know, they paid a very small fee for it, including garbage collections. So just like a regular.
So I think Burrillville has a mill they turned into housing, the Stillwater Mill.
It was really cool, and I thought, God, do we have any mills lying around?
we actually do have mills lying around.
Somebody owns most of that mill.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. I think that mill comes up a lot, but it's
privately
owned.
It's
privately
owned.
Yeah.
What about has there been conversations at all about the elementary school on South Road? Has that come up at all for housing development?
I have not heard it come up for housing development.
Is that not used as a school at all anymore? Just as a COVID place.
Most recently, yeah. And honestly, it is something that the town needs to decide what the heck they're going to do with that property. Because allowing it to sit there idle, I mean, you might as well blow it up now because you let it sit empty for 10 or 20 years and then you're going to have to blow it up.
It's like larchwood.
Yeah. At some point, it's going to become...
Yeah, as soon as the roof
I don't know,
leaking.
What the... like timeline is from talking about it, but would it be appropriate and okay with the committee if we like wrote a recommendation letter to say like in consideration of what to do with that property, we would like to see it turned into affordable housing? And they can just like have that for the record?
I would absolutely support something. I would suggest that just sending a letter saying we'd like to see this as affordable housing would not be as powerful as having some examples or a more specific goal of what you see for the area. Maybe even, I mean, if you can come up with something, you might even be able to ask for some seed money or some matching money for grants.
Some more of a proposal.
If we could identify a grant opportunity out there for concept design work for affordable housing and say it requires a 20% or 50% town match, would they be willing to do that? Because you know, it's not just South Road. We're going to soon be dealing with Wakefield. As well.
Do you know, have they talked about that at all at the town level?
I believe it was on the last school board agenda.
School, okay.
Yeah, I think they had just mentioned that.
Yeah, I think the example thing is huge because I wouldn't have thought about it until I saw it. And I was like, oh, that's actually really cool looking. And I ended up doing some searching and I found one where a private developer turned a school into a hotel. Like a school themed hotel with a bar and like a restaurant and everything. Funny. It was really cool. It's in Portland, of course. Everything's in Portland.
Oh, that's not the McMinimins, is it? And I'll just explain this to everybody, but there's a business that they own a variety of properties, old institutional properties, schools, old hospitals, or whatnot, that they've turned into. To call it a restaurant is not accurate. It is literally an entertainment venue. So my daughter took me to this place when she lived in Portland called the Kennedy School. And you may want to look it up. the gym became a concert venue. The cafeteria is a restaurant. The auditorium is a movie studio. There is literally a bar called the Boiler Room in the Boiler Room. The principal's office is a cigar bar.
That's incredible. Great.
And you just go to this and you wander into a movie with the drink from the bar. It's an amazing.
Well, this is
so much fun.
Yeah, this is a little different, but the jail. The old jail on Charles Street in Boston was turned into a luxury hotel, so it's a little different. And they kept bars on windows and things, but they opened, and it was very high-end. They had a high-end restaurant that they called the Clink, which I thought was great. But, I mean,
repurposing spaces, whether it creates economic activity or housing, I think if there's a proposal that looks realistic, then they might be more open to considering using that space for that purpose. So I can definitely do a little research.
The organizations I worked for in New Hampshire did two schools. Actually, we got two for one. The same school system had exactly the same schools that they decommissioned, so we were able to build. They were small, six classroom buildings, and we ended up with... there were rental apartments, but...
Did you use state or federal funding?
Oh, it was all federal. There was low-income housing tax credits. It was historic tax credits. There were, a lot of... There's always a 16 or 17 group of funding you have to get together to make it work.
Well, I believe these two schools are identical. I think South Road and Wakefield are the same, aren't they?
Yeah, so if you, well, where it cuts down is the cost of the architectural right. and all that stuff. But.
Same exact.
But does the, I don't know about Rhode Island housing at this point in time. Do they have
follow up with that?
Usually they have, well, at least New Hampshire housing had basically, it wasn't seed money, it was pre-development funds. And if the project didn't go forward, it was forgivable. If it did go forward, it was it was moved into the project itself. So that may be some, but you'd have to have a pretty good idea that it was going to go forward.
Yeah.
You want to take on that project, Alicia? Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm just going to go and do it. No, I'm going to do some research.
I think of the woman's name, but I spoke to a woman down there when I was... one of the things I after I read the QAP, I called down to find out how much a project would have to score, how many, you know, to actually get funding. And in the last round, there's 153 possible points. And... she said that she couldn't remember the exact number, but it was well over 100 points to qualify for funding because it's so competitive and it's all over the state. So,
is that it, Brian? Was that it?
Yeah. I'll do some research on the report.
They own a ton of properties. I've been to the Kennedy School and I've been to another one in Troutdale, which was an old mental institution.
That might have been what I ended up finding. I'm going to check it out.
The other housing that you know nobody ever wants to talk about is manufactured housing, mobile homes. Mm-hmm. In New Hampshire, the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund got a ordinance passed that a manufactured housing park could not be sold unless the tenants had a chance to buy the place.
Hmm.
And the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund provided the funding. So they converted, and they've never had one fail. They've converted 120 some, I think now, okay. housing parks. Because what was happening in New Hampshire, and probably happening here, is that the land becomes worth so much, the housing park sells them to a developer because it's already open land, easy to build, it's, you know, and the people living there, they lose all their value because the home's not worth anything when it's off its lot. Mm. So they created resident-owned communities. And they have a national presence now because they have...
The mobile home thing has also become big business now.
Oh, it is. That's what I'm saying, yeah.
You have big national corporations coming in and buying the local mobile home parks and jacking the rental rates.
So people in there have to go out. They put in new, all new units, and you lose the affordability anymore. So that was the reason that we did that in New Hampshire.
When I was in Coventry had quite a few mobile home parks. And one of our biggest ones got bought out by a national outfit. And they immediately started running. And people are stuck because, yes, they're mobile, but it costs a lot of money to move those things.
Yeah, once they're set down, they're not going anywhere.
No. So what happens to the people? They're homeless.
Yeah, and they don't get anything for their homes. Because if they're... usually the landlord will come in and say, if your home's over... 5 years old, 10 years old, whatever it is, you have to remove it.
Mm.
Wow. And they have no rights, so.
Well, we're approaching the 8:20 mark. I'm going to move this on to Brian is a big secret force. So
Liz sort of walked in on it.
Okay.
This may actually dovetail in with some of your previous conversations. So, next meeting. Will be a joint work session with the planning board. All right. The planning board is going to meet now. Normally, the planning board has their work session meetings on the second Tuesday of the month. For May, they're going to move it to to the fourth Thursday, meet at 7 o'clock on Thursday, your normal meeting time. We are going to be doing the meeting over at the rec center. Ooh. I will make sure to remind you repeatedly.
Thank you.
Not because I assume you will all forget, but because I know that I would be the one driving up to town hall at 6:50 going, oh crap, is that here?
Or come into the field and be like, where's everybody?
So, the work session meetings, the last two work session meetings with the planning board have been largely focused on this issue of missing middle housing. I know we have some new members here, but a number of years ago, the town funded $100,000. They put $100,000 into the Affordable Housing Fund and then promptly spent it on a study that is still ongoing, being done by a consultant by the name of Horsley Witten. Horsley Witten has produced the first couple of elements of that. They did some revisions to our inclusionary zoning ordinance. They helped us write the cottage zoning. They helped us do some changes to our affordable ADU ordinance. And now they've moved on to the next bigger stuff, which is missing middle. So multi-unit housing, but in the 3, 4, 6, 8 unit range, not getting up into gigantic multi-unit housing. These are things that you'll find in what they call stacked flats, mansion houses, townhomes, small apartment complexes are all typical things. So we've been working through with the planning board what it is they would like to see in this form of development. Everybody on the planning board readily admits that we're in dire need of affordable housing, but we seem to keep hitting stumbling blocks when it comes to what are we willing to do to allow this type of affordable housing to be created, and where are we going to allow it, and what form will it take? We've presented multiple examples to them of how you can create new housing density on lots without really being any different from surrounding housing densities in the larger neighborhood. But to them, it all looks like we're just cramming houses onto lots. I think they need to hear from you.
This discussion we had tonight.
I think they need to hear this discussion that you had tonight. I think we have some members on the planning board who are not speaking up because they feel that they're outnumbered. And I think having some additional voices in the room will be helpful. I think we have people resistant to change, despite the fact that the reality is we have to change. When your most expensive, your largest driver in housing cost is land, you've got to build more units on a given piece of land if you want the units to be cheaper. What we need to do is we need to figure out how to do that in a way that's acceptable in this community. How do we design it? How do we landscape it? How do we, you know, what styles of housing do we do? How do we control building massing and street frontage and appearance? But we're necessarily going to have to change things to make them better. And I, like I said, I think they, we need some other voices in the room. And having you meeting with them on this issue is what you should be doing. This is a core issue for this group.
I think what could come of that conversation too is a lot of the action items on our section of the comprehensive plan of like looking at, like from our conversation, outcomes of it could be us helping look at parts of town where LMI housing is like not currently allowed, or where we can look at rethinking usage of lots to increase density. So they're gonna love us.
Yeah, I would not go into the meeting with a combative posture. That's rarely an effective way to go, but I do think we need to have some other voices heard in this discussion.
But, you know, again, it makes me think that we need to come prepared with what have other towns done. Because obviously many, many towns, not just in Rhode Island, but probably in Massachusetts and Connecticut, are facing the same issues and having to deal with, we don't want to destroy the character of our town, but this is an issue. And it would be interesting if we could do some research and see what's going on in other places.
Well, I mean, and some of the discussions have gotten, I don't want to say disturbing, that's not the correct word, but when people start talking about, well, we can just build big housing complexes and make them all affordable, I'm like, no, we've been there, we've done that, it doesn't work, we need to do something.
It's not what we want.
It's not what we want as a town.
No, it doesn't fit in this town either. Yeah. But it's easy and fast compared to other solutions.
But it's not a true
quality of life. But it's not sustainable.
It is not. It absolutely isn't. Right. And it doesn't have the other benefits that you get from integrating it throughout the community.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We wind up back in the whole 1960s project.
Yeah, piling people on top of one another. That's just not.
That type of development is what makes people not want to develop affordable housing.
Right.
So
no, that's really.
That's why that's people really are hesitant. Is because they don't.
And there are much, much better ideas out there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that sounds
opportunity.
So okay. is it our meeting and they're joining us, or their meeting and we're joining them?
I think it's always the lower board joining the higher board.
Great.
So why do you have my house on there?
Your house?
Yeah, it's right there on Driver Lane.
I didn't know it's my house right now. We had talked about mobile houses. So
this is actually an interesting thing because the way they build the houses, they're manufactured in not a factory. There's a warehouse not far from here. He builds the entire house, puts it all together. This is just the framing and the roof sections and stuff. Takes it apart, brings it to the lot, puts it on the foundation there, and then they complete the rest of it. Which and there's just I think six different floor plans.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense, you know, with the amount of land, because there's a lot of green space left, because you pushed everything together.
Yeah. So. Well, one of the places my sister initially lived out in Illinois was a really interesting development. It had multi-units over here, it had single families over here. All the single families were very tight, had very small backyards, but everything backed up onto gigantic open space. Some of it was park, some of it was recreational.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I looked at it going, wow, this is way better than having your own little yard, because come out and use all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that's the whole point of it.
So we are on the 8:30 free time frame. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
You can't call me. All right.
All right, we've got action items. We've got an exciting meeting next week.
We're moving. We're rolling.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I should be back for the week.
So, Brian, would you send me that cottage ordinance?
I will do that.
Yeah, as long as once you're ready to work, we can, like, put the piece to base.
Let me check it.
Yeah, I'm talking about it. He was like, because we're so early in the process, it's not going to impact the USDA.
If you just look at it, it was like,
it takes a while because, like, for example, we've localized this.
They must be doing great.
So we do our application.
This is the one I went to for dinner one night at an old mental institution in Troutdale.
But we made arrangements.
But it was
grounds should take 3 months to sell the house. Yeah. So to put an application in November
and
sell
it. It's got huge a lot of event space and hotel rooms.
So we try to get an application as early as possible so that when we're nearing completion of the house, it's not that long.
All right.
Because in November, the house wasn't done, but we knew it was going to take time. So really, the house was done by like March, and we sold it in April kind of thing. But that's the same thing as like we'll put it in now, knowing that by the time the house is finished, it's in a short period. But if that were to happen again, like a leave of absence, then all we need, as long as there's a return to work date, then we're fine.
Oh, okay.
Right. But it happens. So it's just like...
I just got a paper back from my daughter's doctor yesterday, so they have 5 weeks, and we need that.
We're family first for everything, so the fact that we knew, Colin's like, I'm not worried because it's so
early. It's
a while she's in school.
About 20 tiny houses all in like a circle.
So what, how many hours in?
Yeah.
I mean, she gets out of usually home by 2:15, 2:30.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I actually
tried and then I was saying that because that would give us
the town manager when they were marketing the high school to
why is affordable housing
developers before the town. Bond vote.
I don't know.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. I said, have you ever looked at these? Unfortunately, the high school isn't.
Because it's like.
Probably a little bit. Yeah.
But I'm gonna ask because I just don't know.
Oh, that'd be cool.
I'd say it's too much in a residential neighborhood, but this was an elementary school in a residential neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, walking into the place was like walking into school.
You know, or is it the conversation between us?
Well, I think it's important for that perspective from resident point of view.
My wife and I were sitting right in front of you. We'll leave for lunch. And I looked up and you were driving off, and I'm like, oh, look at that.
Perspective of like, it's all quality schools, things like that. You know?
That's what I wrote too.
So I